from Redeemer Broadcasting. This is Holding All Things Together for this fourth weekend in January. I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter. Renee Nicole Good, the activist shot by an ICE agent in Minneapolis a couple of weeks ago after the vehicle she was operating contacted the agent, appears to have been following aggressive tactics promoted by the leftist-funded organizing group Defend the 612. She had joined ICE Watch, a loose network of activists tracking and aiming to disrupt ICE activities. MN ICE Watch, an Instagram page, shared screenshots from a de-arrest primer which gives agitators advice on how to prevent law enforcement officers from taking someone into custody. Is there more information on who is funding these aggressive tactics? That question is looked at today by our guest, Tyler O'Neill.
So you have Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors, you have Amalgamated Charitable, which is a union-aligned foundation, you have the Tides Foundation, which is a pass-through funder that has received millions from Hungarian-American billionaire George Soros' Open Society Foundations, and the Proteus Fund.
Also ahead, Pastor Bill Shisko discusses what is forbidden in the Eighth Commandment. Later in the program, writer Jerry Wiss looks at the life of Jacob in Genesis 29. Jerry points out that Leah, Jacob's least favorite wife, is an example of God's regard for the oppressed, an example to us. Finally, we'll take another look at this week in history. All this just ahead on Holding All Things Together.
Well, in this section on sound doctrine, as we go through the Westminster Shorter Catechism, which you can get a copy of from Redeemer Broadcasting, we're in the section on the commandments, and specifically the Eighth Commandment, which is, you shall not steal. Now, what's required in the Eighth Commandment? It's required the lawful procuring or gaining and furthering the wealth and outward estate of ourselves and others. What's forbidden in the Eighth Commandment? Well, it forbids whatever does or may unjustly hinder our own or our neighbor's wealth or outward estate. And we've made the point in here that the Eighth Commandment dashes the idea of socialism, that the government should own everything, or communism, that people are not to have private property. And not only are those systems contrary to the law of God, but they're really not good for us for many reasons. So what do these commandments teach and why are they good? Well, it teaches clearly, don't take what isn't yours. One of the devotionals that Margaret, my wife, and I use in the morning for confessing our own sins has this probing question. Have I failed to return what I borrowed from someone else? Don't take what isn't yours. The Eighth Commandment not to steal means if you borrow, well, then you need to pay back, and it's not wrong to pay back with a reasonable amount of interest, unless there's some other arrangement. It means not to steal. You use all that you have to make it, and your time connected with it, profitable for others. I love Ephesians 6 and verse 15, where to redeem the time, where to make market of the time, because the days are evil. Have you thought of your work like that? Everything you do, you're making it profitable in your own home, the hospitality that you show to others, and giving your home for evangelism, making food to give to other people. Well, all of that is part of the Eighth Commandment to further the wealth and outward estate of others. Wise investing. Not all investing is wise, but you want to be wise as an investor. Consider the ant. And the ant who provides supplies in summer and gathers and harvests, which we need to do when we can work hard so that we can save up for the times that we can't. And last but hardly least, giving to assist other people as you give your time to mentor or actual assistance. All of that is in view in the commandment that represents Jesus, who though he was poor, became rich. Although he was rich, he became poor. That we, through his poverty, might become rich. The Eighth Commandment, not to steal, but procure as best as you can the wealth and outward estate of yourself and others.
On the Zoom line with us today is Tyler O'Neill from the Daily Signal. Tyler, you are a busy man, and I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dan.
I see any number of articles flowing from your pen. One recent one has the title, Who's Funding the Aggressive Anti-ICE Tactics Used by Activists Like Renee Nicole Good? And we all feel bad that there was a person who died as they were trying to oppose our agents. Yet at the same time, these aggressive tactics are undeniable. So get us started here. Let's talk about where does their funding come from? Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. So I think the important thing to mention here, and I really appreciate you saying that it was tragic. I think it is tragic that we had someone die in these situations. But I think it's also important for us to zoom back and ask, why is all of this happening? And I think ultimately, you know, this traces back to this really neo-Confederate push demonizing the enforcement of our laws on immigration, and who are organizing to oppose immigration and customs enforcement on the ground. And if you look at, you know, what's been happening, especially in Minnesota, the rhetoric we've been hearing from Tim Walz and from Ilhan Omar, Tim Walz suggesting that he would use the Minnesota National Guard to fight against ICE, Ilhan Omar saying that ICE was like a hostile, that this was taking over Minneapolis. And you have to ask, why is ICE going there in force? What is happening here? Well, we've had this push from, unfortunately, from Democrats. You know, I think it would be a problem if it came from Republicans too, where they're essentially trying to nullify federal law. And they have these so-called sanctuary bills where they say, look, local law enforcement is prohibited from working with federal law enforcement on immigration enforcement, enforcing our immigration laws. And, you know, it's one thing if you want to change our immigration laws, if you want to work through the system, I'm all for having a debate about the way our laws are right now. But we have a humongous crisis that led to President Trump winning his second term, where, you know, President Biden opened the border wide and had millions of illegal aliens coming into the country. And I'm a guy who grew up with, alongside and some of my fellow students when I was a kid, were legal Mexican immigrants. And I know so many other legal immigrants that I'm proud to call my fellow Americans.
Yes.
But every time we have an illegal alien who comes into this country, who cuts the line, the real people that they're offending here are the legal immigrants who went through all the hoops, all the legal hurdles to honor our laws. And they are showing utter disdain and contempt. And look, I understand a lot of these people are in dire straits. I want us to be able to help people across the world. But we are a country. And as a country, we need to have sovereignty. We need to have sovereign borders. We're especially a democratic republic. And that means that we elect the people who represent us. And if you have illegal aliens coming into this country, and then you have people who are fighting to prevent common sense voter ID laws, I mean, that's a recipe for taking over our country and fundamentally changing it in ways that this is beyond the pale. And frankly, it's not the sort of thing that makes logical sense in any case.
No.
So what we're talking about here on the ground, and sorry to get all the way back to the concrete issue, is that Renee Nicole Good, she wasn't just you know, holding a sign. She wasn't just protesting. She wasn't just saying she opposes the enforcement of immigration law. She was on the ground trying to get between ICE and the illegal aliens who they're arresting.
Mm-hmm.
There are multiple videos showing her doing this. And unfortunately, there was one situation where she pulls out with her vehicle and she made contact with an ICE officer. I don't know whether she intended to do that. I don't know what the situation really was. We can't know her motives there. Seemed like she was being pretty aggressive. But the ICE officer opened fire because he was rightfully, I think, in my opinion, afraid for his life.
Yep.
He has a vehicle slamming into him. And, you know, I don't want to see people die in these situations.
No.
But I do think this was a situation of self-defense. And we've had DHS confirm that Renee Nicole Good was part of one of these ICE Watch groups. And these
yes.
ICE Watch groups, they're loosely organized, but there's an organization that's organizing them and that puts out materials telling them what to do. One of these materials has gotten a lot of attention online. I think it's right that it has. It's called this De-Arrest Primer, and it encourages agitators. I mean, they're essentially, I don't know if I should call them activists because they're physically trying to prevent ICE from arresting people. And this guide encourages them to hug someone who would otherwise be an arrestee. It encourages them to open the doors of law enforcement vehicles to let arrestees out, helping them to avoid justice. And then it has this line where it celebrates every de-arrest as a shaking off and as a micro-intifada, which is just echoing this language we've been hearing over and over again with globalize the intifada.
Yes.
Intifada refers to the violent resistance of Arabs living in Israel against the Jewish state. Globalize the intifada is little more than a call for an incitement to violence against Jews across the world. And yet we're seeing here in this anti-ICE document a reference to intifada. So this raises a lot of questions to me. I was able to trace Defund the 612 is a group that organizes these ICE Watch groups. And according to various sites online, the way that you can give money to Defund the 612 is through this nonprofit called Cooperation Cannon River. That is the only nonprofit I was able to find that is registered with the IRS that accepts contributions on behalf of Defend the 612. I have to say, I don't have concrete evidence that Defend the 612 and Cooperation Cannon River are one organization, but I do think, you know, money here is fungible, and it is very noteworthy who gave to this 501c3, this Cooperation Cannon River.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are the Left's Dark Money Network that has funded a lot of these agitators on the ground, that has funded the nonprofits that staffed and advised the Biden administration pushing woke policies there. So you have Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors, which gave the group $15,000 in 2023. You have Amalgamated Charitable, which is a union-aligned foundation that gave them $10,000 in 2022. You have the Tides Foundation, which is a pass-through funder that has received millions from Hungarian-American billionaire George Soros' Open Society Foundations. They gave them $10,000. And the Proteus Fund, which is another left-leaning pass-through funder, gave them $10,000. And then there are two other groups that gave them even more. One of them is MN350, which is a climate activist group in Minnesota. They gave the group $75,000 in 2021. Now, MN350 is the only organization. I reached out to all these people to see what they would say when asked about this. MN350 said that they only gave money to Cooperation Cannon River for a specific climate program, an environmental program. They would not give me details on that environmental program, and they would not clarify the relationship between Cooperation Cannon River and Defend the 612. So I don't have any proof that MN350 was trying to fund anti-ICE actions by giving to this Cooperation Cannon River. They claimed that they weren't. But it's very interesting that Cooperation Cannon River has essentially no online presence, whereas Defend the 612 has a very big online presence. And to me, that suggests that Cooperation Cannon River is little more than a siphon for funds to Defend the 612.
Yeah.
I reached out to both – to the contact information listed for both of them, and neither of them got back to me. So I'd really like for them to clarify this, but it seems to me as though we're looking at a classic shell nonprofit that is propping up this agitator group.
Well, that's very helpful. And today we're talking with Tyler O'Neill, and he's senior editor at the Daily Signal. If you look up the Daily Signal online, dear listener, you may get the wrong impression. I have full confidence, and I love the Daily Signal, and we stand behind these people. Sometimes there's lies that are perpetrated. But Tyler, tell us briefly about the Daily Signal and how to get in touch with you.
Yeah, so the Daily Signal, we think of ourselves as America's outpost in Washington. We are reporting the news as it happens in the nation's capital for all of the Americans who are mostly not represented, or feel unrepresented in D.C. And so we focus on, you know, holding the deep state accountable. We focus on decreasing the size and scope of the federal government.
Yep.
And we focus on returning to sanity on issues such as gender, abortion, and many of the other things where the left has gone so far off the deep end that they're making America almost unrecognizable.
Yes.
Critical race theory, climate alarmism, all these things where, you know, I think most American men and women want to be able to live lives that are honoring to God, that can get them ahead with the American dream and enable them to give more money charitably to their neighbors and make a positive impact in the world. And unfortunately, what we have is a government that in the name of charity has taken away your ability to give to the groups that you believe in and that you really help help people, and instead put people on the dole long term. And this creates so many social problems. But the Daily Signal is here in Washington trying to cover things, trying to make sure that we can move towards sanity in every step that we can take.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and an address where they can find you online, Tyler.
Thank you. Yes, you can find me. I'm most prolific on X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, Tyler2O'Neill. You can also see my articles on dailysignal.com. There's also my Substack, which is woketopus.com. Yes, it's from my second book, The Woketopus, The Dark Money Cabal, Manipulating the Federal Government. The woke octopus that I think remains a threat. I mean, President Trump has done yeoman's work in trying to root it out of the federal government, but it is a long-term slog.
Right. Tyler O'Neill, our friend, may God bless you and keep you and bless your family. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks again for having me. God bless you too.
This week, Jerry Wiss returns to the life of Jacob in Genesis 29. The Lord brings Jacob through experiences for him to learn dependence on God, first with his uncle Laban, who seems to have gotten the upper hand in their relationship, and also at home, where Leah, his least favorite wife, bears him sons instead of his beloved Rachel. Leah is an example of God's regard for the oppressed, whom the Scriptures encourage us to always regard, because God does. Jerry is a frequent contributor to Holding All Things Together and is a writer for Christian Renewal magazine.
We return this week to Genesis 29 to further follow the life of Jacob, the covenant heir. We saw last time when looking into Genesis 29 that Jacob had been hoodwinked by his uncle Laban into marrying Leah instead of Rachel. although he is given Rachel's hand as well, but only after agreeing to work for Laban another 7 years. As noted, a rivalry develops between the two, even though their relationship is, we can say, symbiotic. Both get what they want, though in Jacob's case, not entirely. Jacob now has a family and a means of supporting them, but remains an employee under the dominion of his uncle. Laban seems to have gotten the better part of the deal, having married off his two daughters and having them supported with Jacob's labor for him. We will see that God will not permit this situation to continue indefinitely. In Genesis 28, Jacob, the covenant heir, was promised by God the land of Canaan, but he is currently in Mesopotamia. Moreover, God promised that Canaan would be inherited by Jacob's offspring, and that they would become numerous, so much so that they will spread in all directions, and the families of the earth will be blessed through them, pointing to the ultimate covenant heir, Jesus Christ, and his worldwide redemption. It's no surprise, then, that Jacob grows disquieted and restless under Laban. God has other plans for him that are bound to come to fruition, but not yet. Jacob is in the position of enriching Laban's house, since God blesses the work of the covenant heir, and so the rivalry becomes one for covenant inheritance. It's clear, however, that the inheritance belongs to Jacob, not Laban, and yet it's Laban, at this point anyway, who gains all the benefits. To add to Jacob's frustration, Leah, not Rachel, bears him children. Leah names her sons in acknowledgment of God's kindness and favor in the face of her not being regarded by Jacob. In verse 31 of Genesis 29, we read, "When the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren." The Lord is mindful and cares for the oppressed, not those suffering because of their own sin, in which they continue, although he does call his own from among these, and in a way we can say we all fit in this category. But he has special regard for those cast aside by others or by society because of their situation or who they are. In other words, because of no fault of their own. This is something we ought always to keep in mind as Christians. Psalm 9, verse 9 tells us that the Lord is a stronghold for the oppressed. Consider similar verses in Psalm 72 and Luke 4, verse 18. It's a sad and melancholy thing to see a wife and mother name her children in response to her husband's disregard and negligence. Reuben, meaning, see, a son, for Jacob to notice and now love Leah, or Simeon, meaning heard, because the Lord heard that Leah was hated and so gave her another son. Or Levi, meaning attached, reflecting Leah's hope that Jacob will finally be attached to her, that is to love her because she has given him three sons. It's only with the last one, Judah, that Leah changes her tune. Judah means praise. With Judah, Leah's attention is finally diverted from herself and her marital plight and uplifted to God. Is she here resigned? Has she finally found peace with her situation, finding contentment in the love of her children in place of Jacob's love? Well, we're not told, but naming her son Praise tells us of her upward look unto God instead of only to her dismal marriage. We are told in Psalm 37, verse 4, to delight ourselves in the Lord, and he will give us the desire of our hearts. Judah is also the progenitor of the Davidic line through which the Messiah would come. More next time.
Time now for This Week in History. January 18th, 1882. Oh, bother. The creator of Winnie the Pooh, A.A. Milne, is born in Hampstead in the United Kingdom. And January 19, 1809, an author of a decidedly different vein is born in Boston, Massachusetts. By the time he dies and is buried in Baltimore, Maryland in 1847, Edgar Allan Poe is famous for The Raven, The Telltale Heart, The Fall of the House of Usher, and other dark works of fiction. That was This Week in History, events as man recorded them, as God ordained them.
That's our program for this week. Thanks for joining us. Holding All Things Together is a production of Redeemer Broadcasting, and the views expressed are those of the participants. If you'd like to contact us for any reason, we would love to hear from you. Our email address is ministry@redeemerbroadcasting.org. For Holding All Things Together, I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Cal Carter.
God willing, see you next week.